Chris, you're welcome to another podcast, Pell Droids. My name is Russell, and you two are
Rich,
Daniel,
and via Skype we have
Leon.
Nice to have you back, Rich.
Yeah, thank you. Well. Really happy to be back.
Good, and you're goading us with lots of hair.
Yeah, I've grown my hair. I'm just totally enthralled to Gareth Bale, so I'm going to keep going until I've got the top knot, which I can do, but I haven't got in tonight.
Are you going to stop proceedings halfway through to try to refashion top knots?
Yeah, quite possibly.
The whole thing is going on around you, like in the Georgia game.
Yeah, I think if you're worth it, you've just got to do it, I guess. I don't know.
It sort of reminded me of Andy Carroll a bit when the top knot came loose.
Yes. Everybody was straining to have a look of a bald patch as well, weren't they? Just to double check. I didn't see one, so. So, Serbia on the weekend. Let's be honest, we owe them one. We made them look world beaters two campaigns ago. I don't think they're that good. But as we're kind of warming up to this, Leon, you sent a message, so you've been doing some research. And I knew our record wasn't great. Dan, you called it shambolic just off air a minute ago. But I think it's even worse than that.
Against Serbia.
Well, against sort of Yugoslavia, all those sorts of nations. Yeah.
Biggest sort of constituent part of the former Yugoslavia. I mean, our record's appalling. Against Serbia and Montenegro, it's appalling. And against Yugoslavia, it's appalling. And against all the other big countries of the former Yugoslavia, it's absolutely appalling. In fact, we've only beaten Macedonia once and Montenegro once, which makes it two victories, I think, out of 25 games against Yugoslavia and the now independent states that once made up Yugoslavia, which is just beyond shambolic. You're right.
We're unbeaten against Kosovo, though.
Yeah, exactly. We might have a 100% record against Kosovo. Yeah, I don't know what it is really, because it doesn't really make a huge amount of sense to me, considering that Serbia are not that great a team. And like you said, they absolutely hammered us in both those games a few years back. But they didn't qualify that time. I think they might have been two out of three wins they had in the group were against us, and they put nine goals past us. They're a good team with good players, but I mean, I don't think they're as good as Belgium, for instance, and we don't seem to have any kind of mental issue whenever we come up against Belgium. They're a physical team, obviously. But again, you know, look at Belgium, look at some of the big guys in that team who can really play as well. So I don't know, I was going to write an article about our appalling record against the countries of the former Yugoslavia, but I couldn't really draw any conclusions from it. I don't know why our record is so bad against these countries. It doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I'd probably say, yeah, you're right kind of in terms of ability and so on, but prior to kind of this group, this team now, I think we've been traditionally a weak-spirited, kind of quite soft team for quite a long time. I mean, and these countries from the former Yugoslavia, they're kind of partly possibly because of their kind of political history, are tougher, hungrier, traditionally willing to fight more on the pitch. So I think, I mean, prior to this squad now, which has got strength in it, which has kind of grown together, we've always come across as quite a soft, not the most committed team. So I think probably that would explain why we would come up short against similar teams in terms of ability, but teams which are way, way stronger to motivation than us. But I don't think the record, personally, will count for much from this point onwards.
I don't know, because who were the biggest stumbling block in the last qualifying group we had? Bosnia. You know, in the end, no one else in the group had any trouble with Bosnia. Ireland had no trouble with Bosnia in the playoff. We did. Why? Because they used to be in Yugoslavia. There's something about these teams, we can't handle them. And unless we win on Saturday, I think it'll be, obviously, unless we win, but to me, there is a bogey team element about these teams. And given the situation we're in now, having dropped points against Georgia, I think we really need a win. A is a statement of intent for the group. And also, pragmatically, we're going to have to take 3 points off our rival. I don't think the draw will be enough. The Yugoslavian teams do have an attitude about them. They put everything into their football teams. Let's face it, I may be wrong, but you don't really think of Yugoslavian countries doing much else in sport. Football is their...
They love their basketball.
Well, I don't know.
They do love their basketball.
I know nothing about these sports. So
tennis, skiing.
I think. I mean, I suppose you could argue. I mean, back in the '80s and early
'90s,
not Serbia. Croatia produces skiers, bizarrely, but Croatia is incredible for the size of the country. It is to produce top footballers, basketball players, tennis players, and skiers.
And Australians.
It's just incredible, really.
They produce lots of Australians as well, which I think is also very impressive.
Yeah. No, I can imagine they'll have a rugby league team soon, won't they? And all the players will be Croatian, born in Sydney.
They'll have a union team that'll come over and thrash us.
That's covered rugby, geopolitics, water polo.
I always think it's a bit more, my point is there is an attitude, there is a determination with their football. It's a big part of their identity. Plus, they're also really, really skillful. And I think it's the combination of the two. Of they've always got a good touch, their players. Plus, they've got a bit of metal to them. And I think normally we'd struggle against that combination. You know, a team that has got a bit of metal but not much skill, we might be able to deal with that. Likewise, a team that's skillful but fragile, we might be able to push around. Not that we need to play that kind of game anymore, but...
I've always thought of Yugoslavia, back when I was younger, I always thought of Yugoslavia as being, like, you know, frankly, like a lot of old Eastern European sides, as being quite cynical, gamesmanship, you know, very good at that. And that our kind of old style up and at 'em industry and running around a bit and getting stuck in just gets found out. And, well, obviously did, given how bad the record is. I mean, I thought at one point, I thought, well, now that Yugoslavia's split up, should they be, you know, worse than the sum of the parts? Has it strengthened them? But if you kind of think of the talent, if you were to kind of put some sort of token Yugoslavia side together made up of all the best players, that's a hell of a side. But then that side never really achieved a great deal when you had a Yugoslavia. But then I can guess it's just probably a complete melting pot of fury and ethnic clashes and identity. And no one, it's amazing they ever got on the pitch, let alone achieved to a certain
speaking
degree.
Different languages. They wouldn't even be speaking the same language, would they? Because there's like six or seven languages.
People can probably converse in more than one language over there, I suppose. And I'm kind of fascinated by Yugoslav football, given that ethnic kind of mix. And we only have to worry about Serbia, though. We don't have to worry about all of them. So, I mean,
to be fair, they dropped Montenegro, haven't they, as well? So.
I am kind of worried about the game a little bit, because just got used to getting worried to get about these sorts of games.
Well, here's the thing, like, to go back to what Rich was saying, Gareth Bale's come out and said himself, this team isn't really interested in history, what's gone before. They're interested in making history themselves. And we saw that at the Euros, and we'd never been to a semi-final before. This team is sort of going places where other Wales teams haven't. And if you look at it kind of logically and sort of dispassionately, and you look at the players that Serbia have, and you look at the players we have, I'm not saying they're a weak team in any way, because they've got good, strong players, but there's no logical reason why we should be intimidated by playing them, and there shouldn't be any sort of inferiority complex about playing a team where, let's face it, their star striker plays in the championship for Newcastle, Mitrovic. Their sort of main playmaker plays for Southampton, Tadic. I mean, you know, our sort of playmaker plays for Arsenal, our sort of main forward plays for Real Madrid. Why should we be intimidated about playing them? Ivanovic, I've just had a look before. I think he's only played once for Chelsea since the last international break. He's their captain and top scorer, Russ was just saying before, even as a defender. And Kolarov, who was excellent against us, but both the times we got hammered by them a few years ago, I think he scored in both games. He's suspended for Saturday. So I don't think there's any reason why this group of players should be going into this game fearing them.
I don't think they'll be fearing them, but they'll be aware that they're going to have to step up a few levels from the last game, certainly.
And it wasn't great, and a lot's been said about it, and it's been people kind of saying the group's over and everything else. But Georgia, I always expected Georgia to take points, and I'd seen it for a while. I thought the Moldova and the Georgia games for us, home and away, were the key games, because you get 12 points out of those, then that's a significant contribution to what you're going to need to get out of this group, whether it's playoff or to top it, which I think was clearly still all to play for. And then it puts pressure on them to take points off others. So unfortunately, Georgia have taken points off us. We're the first team that either of those two sides have taken points off, but we won't be the last. I'm certainly not with Georgia anyway. But it is going to be a step up. But we've got Allen and Ramsey back. Johnny Williams is back. Not that I necessarily expect him to start. No Ben Davis, though. But we go in with Allen, Bell and Ramsey and Williams, and we keep saying this, and this isn't news. We can take most teams on, can't we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm just really interested in how Serbia are going to come to Cardiff, whether they decide, because they're top in the group, they'll be happy to take a point and they'll sit back, which probably won't suit us. Or they might come and try and win. I mean, I think they probably will keep it very tight and quite cagey. And then it'll be up to us to set the tempo, and I think it'll be up to the crowd to kind of increase their own tempo considerably from how it's been for the last couple of games, probably. But yeah, I mean, it's winnable, and I think it's kind of like what Leon's saying. We've got great players. There's no reason we should feel intimidated. It's just making sure the game plan's right, people work towards that. And just, I guess also, if we do go into the lead, I don't think there's much room for kind of switching off. There's certainly no room for kind of slacking or thinking it's won. One goal. I mean, our defence hasn't been kind of on point for a while, I don't think. So we can't just go 1-0 up and sit back on that, I don't think.
And I think the crowd is important, actually, because, I mean, we touched on it in the last podcast, and I know there was a lot to be said about, you know, the booing. Not that I heard a huge amount, but I did hear some. And I was just looking back now and trying to think, in terms of like being at home, obviously, not during the Euros, I think it's been a while since we've had a home qualifier under lights, certainly on a Saturday. I'm trying to think. I can't think the last time we had one of those games. You know, people are going to be, you know, out in Cardiff for a while. Obviously, you've got the rugby on as well, so people are going to kind of be well into it. Hopefully, there's not going to be people kind of so drunk they, you know, they're asleep on a bus somewhere, or, you know, asleep in Wetherspoons and don't get to the game. But I think it's going to be a brilliant atmosphere. Mm, I reckon it could be. I'm trying to think. Obviously, the Belgium game that wasn't a weekend, mind. But I'm trying to. I can't remember.
I think it was
a weekday. But of course, it was in the summer, wasn't it? It was in June, so. Again, I'm sure the lights probably came on at some point.
I'm sure it was a Friday night
that
game.
That sort of winter lights on a weekend. I'm struggling to remember the last time we've had one of those games. You know, we've had friendlies. Northern Ireland was at, you know, Netherlands and things like that.
Yeah,
but we're a game that really matters as well, and it kind of does, because, you know, you're right, Rich. You know, we do have to step up, and we have to pick up those 2 points somewhere now. And I think, you know,
absolutely,
3 points now is a must in this fixture. And other than Davis missing, which I think is a blow, actually. I got a lot of time for Ben Davis. I think he's been really, really important for us in defence. Then there's no excuses. Not that Coleman never makes excuses when there's not players available, to be fair to him, but there aren't really in that respect. So we have to win, don't we?
Yeah, we've got players in form as well. If you look, you know, Bale, was 3 goals in the last 2 games at Real Madrid, and he looks sharp. You know, Joe Allen's been outstanding all season. Having Ramsey back, and apparently he's been pretty good since he's come back. It's a big one as well. So, you know, these are our big sort of attacking players who all seem to be in good form. Sam Vokes as well, you know, 4 goals so far in the Premier League this season. That all bodes well, I think, some of our key players are in good form.
There's a strong mentality in the squad, though, isn't there? Not just in terms of like, oh, they must be because we did well in the Euros, but you get a sense in the way they reinforce messages, and the way Coleman sort of speaks to the press, both before, in the run-up to games, and then immediately afterwards. You get a sense there's a strong mentality there that kind of addresses and confronts when standards have slipped a bit. And I felt that we scored fairly early on. I know the cliche is you can score too early, which I think is kind of rubbish. You score early, you've got more time to score more goals. And then we just kind of, I felt we just kind of expected it to sort of then just happen.
Yeah.
And then we just completely lost shape in the second half. I have no doubt that was really hammered home to the players. Because I thought we started quite well, actually, against Georgia.
We started really very well.
With a bit of urgency. A few loose balls, didn't quite make it, so lacking a little bit of precision, but urgency was there. I expect us to start with at least the same amount of urgency. Whether we can sustain that, that's the concern.
I think if you make the good start and then you get the goal and you keep going, I think Serbia would come out of their shell perhaps if that happened, and then that's perfect for us. I mean, I would hope maybe we'd be looking like another Russia, potentially. I mean, Ramsey is just huge, having Ramsey. I mean, and Joe Allen as well, but I think Ramsey really, really is a massively important player for us, I think. Because you can't replace Joe Allen either, but Ramsey really, I don't think, can be replaced in this team. There's no one close. Because Bale can do most things by himself, but I think with Ramsey, it's just that kind of that quickness of thought. I mean, Bale's kind of a massively physical attacking player, but Ramsey's got that thought along with Joe Allen. I mean, I think they're huge. They're so big for this game. Yeah. I mean, I think if either one of those had played in the previous game, we'd have won that game, I think.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that. I think it was such a shame that when Ramsey was out, we know exactly what damage it's going to do to the performance we're able to put together. I thought we coped with it against Austria very well, and against Georgia quite poorly, but only as the game went on. That game was there for the taking. Had we got the second goal before half time, I don't think Georgia would have made much of an attempt at all. I think the other thing is, when Ramsey is back doing what he does in midfield, or even if he sort of drifts out wide, Ledley tends to play better with him with him. Otherwise, Ledley drops too deep and we can see too much of the centre of the park for my liking when Ramsey isn't there. And teams can then come at us with Ramsey there and Ledley and Allen alongside him. I don't feel we'll necessarily be under that much pressure in the centre of the park. So therefore, once again, then gives Bale more opportunities to not have to drop deep. He can do what he wants to do.
But with them coming back, I mean, again, it stands to reason. What it does, it also strengthens the bench, and that then you've got options so that if you do want to bring on Johnny Williams or Emmett Hughes or Andy King, you can actually not just replace like for like, but you can actually do something a little bit different as well if you want to bring one of those on, which we couldn't really do against Georgia because he tried to make changes. He brought Cotter on, it was completely ineffective. You look at that bench now and you kind of go, actually, and notwithstanding the usual substitutions, so Robson Carney will come on for Vokes at some point after 70 minutes, obviously. But, you know, those changes can be made if we need to make them. If we want to kind of shut a game down, you can bring sort of Dave Edwards on or whatever. And it just makes the bench stronger. So clearly they bring something to the starting lineup.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But that bench is important.
The changes against Austria was a big setback. The personnel changes and the formation change made us a lot worse in that game, which kind of highlighted the sort of deficiencies in our squad quite dramatically, because we went from being completely comfortable in the game to almost surprised that they got a goal to then almost playing panic football then.
But in both
in
games,
the last 10 minutes.
But against Austria as well, we didn't come out with the urgency that we have done in the past.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of loose passing. And again, I just think that mentality thing, I suspect there's probably going to be some, you know, some messages in that camp is going to be a lot about, okay, how you start each half, because it was noticeable. And there's something in that about missing.
It's been a problem for a little while now, the second half, the start of the second half, actually. I think Hugh Davis put a really good statistic on Twitter earlier, which was that we haven't gone in at half-time in a competitive game conceding since the last time we played Serbia, actually 21 competitive games ago. So kind of shows that in the first half of games we've been good. It's been where we've had problems of late really is coming out in the second half and looking pretty sleepy really against Georgia and Austria, and against Portugal in the semi-final as well. We came out really sloppily start of the second half, and I hope that's something that maybe Coleman has noted and is going to try and do something about, really, because it's getting to be a bit of a regular issue.
Yeah, it's become a bit of a habit, and whether the other teams prosper from it or not, kind of immaterial. I think it's something we've got to knock on the head. Davis, I think in terms of like the squad or the team, the only other sort of talking point really is no Ben Davis. He's dropped out. And there seems to be a bit on Twitter this afternoon, there seems to be a bit of a lobby behind Paul Dummett to play, which I just think is kind of out of novelty or curiosity, personally.
For the must-win game you want to bring Paul Dummett in. I mean, yeah, that's fine. But I just think it has to be Collins, surely. I couldn't imagine. I mean, look, if this was at the end of the Championship season and Paul Dummett has been an integral part and Newcastle are 20 points ahead of their rival, maybe you can make a case for it. But, I mean, is Paul Dummett any better on the ball than James Collins, for example? I mean, I don't know, he might be. But, I mean, he's not Ben Davis, is he, clearly, on the ball? I mean, I'm happy with Collins coming in. I've not always been a huge Collins fan, but, I mean, I think, especially recently, he's solid. And I think possibly coming up against Mitrovic, it might not be a bad thing to have a really rugged kind of guy there.
I think there's something in that respect. I think that, you know, he will know the game, his game and things like that. And I suppose that's...
And I'd say as well, Collins against Mitrovic, Collins strikes me more as the kind of guy who's going to get up in Mitrovic's face, potentially winding him up, than Ben Davis might. I mean, look, James Collins is like a red card threat, but so is Mitrovic, for different reasons probably. But I think you could give him a sly little pinch or a kick. Just see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, for a start, I'm amazed Paul Dummett is still in the squad and hasn't dropped out through injury, because that's usually what he's done by now.
Probably has by now.
Yeah. Breaking news. And I suppose there was also some talk about whether he should replace Taylor as a wing back, but I think, I don't know. I mean, again, no one has seen enough of him, but I think he is a centre half. And I suppose he is like for like, and he's that sort of left of three and left footed and the like, but I'd want to go with Collins personally.
I mean, look, with Dummett, wait until the end of the season. I mean, he's playing for a manager who will improve him defensively, no doubt. So wait till the end of the season, and then let's see how he gets on next season. If he's still part of Benitez's plans next season when they're in the EPL, then yeah, he'd be on a kind of a level playing field then with Collins. But at the moment, I don't think so. I think Collins is fine. Collins is a decent replacement.
Yeah.
And we've got Chester, who can bring the ball out as well, so Collins won't have to take on board any of Davis's responsibilities.
I think that's a key thing, isn't it? It's not just who is replacing whom, it's the roles that those players have in that defensive unit. And we saw it against the Netherlands when Collins came on for Williams and was basically being asked to play that kind of almost that sort of libero, sort of sweeper type role. And that's just not his game. It is Williams' game. And I think longer term it will become Chester's game. I've thought that for a while, though I could think it could be Davis as well, which I think is great. It's not
or
Collins'
Ethan Ampadu's game.
Or even Ethan Ampadu's game. But he's got homework, so he can't. He's got an assignment to do for school. But it's not just a case, of who comes in for whom. It's about those roles. And if you say to Collins, actually, you're just going to do more of the man-marking role on Mitrovic, presumably who's going to play, because there's very few goals in the other strikers in the squad, then that's fine. I've got no problem with that whatsoever, because he's done that, you know, for years, both in the EPL and for Wales. And I know he hasn't had a run of games for us. He's getting a few minutes here. He's getting a friendly substitute appearance there. And I don't, not for one second sort of saying he should be in ahead of Davis, Williams or Chester as a first choice. But I think he's more than adequate replacement.
I mean, that kind of suits him
to deal with the
well.
Aerial threat.
Yeah, it suits him. If we were playing two centre-backs, he'd probably... Well, I don't know, he'd probably be fourth choice, I think. So he's less likely to get game time. But with three, he knows he's probably... He's the guy who's going to come in if any one of the three.
Yeah, and I think he actually is a better centre half in a flat back four. I think it's almost like the formation doesn't suit him in that respect. But I think he's been fine when he's been called upon. I mean, somebody kind of hammered him this afternoon on Twitter because he trod on the ball against Israel when he should have scored. Well, you know, I don't think you start hammering defenders for that. I mean, yes, he should have scored. Yeah. But that's not a reason to pick Dummett over him, is it? I mean, Dummett probably wouldn't even have got into the box.
I'm just wondering, would anyone consider a change of formation? Or would you stick with a back five?
A change of formation because of Davis's injury, or just in general?
Well, because of Davis's injury, really. But I do wonder if maybe we might have become a little bit predictable as well. I don't know. But considering in the last campaign we did play a few different formations, we did play with a back four for certain games, and I know the media, especially the English media, seems to think we're completely wedded to this back five. But that's not actually the case if you look at the qualification campaign. And it was really just in the second half of the campaign where that back five was settled on, and then we stuck with that for the Euros. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not sort of advocating that we go with a back four for this game. I just wonder if it might be going through Coleman's mind at all.
I think you're onto something in terms of like the predictability. I think there is an element that we're lacking, an element of surprise that we probably had a couple of years ago with it.
But with personnel, you know, with Bale, Ramsey, and then Allen in the form that he's on, even if the formation is what we've done before, we've got players who wouldn't be predictable in that sense. You could never really feel comfortable saying, well, don't worry, we can pin Bale down and he's dealt with. I mean, he's in a rich vein of form, even by his standards, and some of the goals he's scoring are phenomenal. He's still that danger in that. I don't necessarily think we need to make that change now, to be perfect.
That's a really good point, actually. You could go, say you went, I don't know, 4-4-2 then, for argument's sake, or 4-3-3, and you're having to play King or Edwards or Cottrell in some of those midfield positions. There's an element of predictability. Just because you've changed formation doesn't actually bring about necessarily any new or different threat. And I think the top level anyway, most of these coaches and most of the players ought to be able to assess something that they're presented with that they weren't expecting, yeah, and to make the adjustments. So I think any advantage you get, by and large, I think tends to be, you know, very early on. Then a team will settle, maybe make a change formation wise, personnel wise, whatever it might be. But I don't know. I think if he does change it, then it would be to bring in, it allows him to bring in that extra midfielder, which allows him maybe to bring in somebody like Johnny Williams, or whether he then brings in someone like King, and then Bale can have a completely free reign, and
yeah,
he can basically do whatever he wants.
I just think
that has an appeal.
Yeah, definitely. I just think you don't want players on the pitch who are going to slow things down for Allen, Ramsey and Bale. And I think King, just, I'm not saying he hasn't ever contributed anything positive to us. He has done. But he's slow in mind and in body, which isn't ideal. I mean, this guy's won the EPL, but he's not an EPL player, I don't think. I don't know. I would look to the formation that keeps people like him off the pitch as long as possible.
So there's a question. Can you find a more undeserving EPL winner than Andy King?
It's up there with like Jimmy Traore, the Champions League winner.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy
yeah.
King.
Luke Chadwick. Yeah.
Well, what about Johnny Williams though, Rich? Would you not be tempted to bring him in?
It's a risk to start him, I think.
Start him, and I mean, Serbia are going to be a dirty team, I'd imagine. They usually are. Just put Johnny Williams in and say, look, win Bale some free kicks. You know, just run at them.
Yeah,
I think.
No, I think. I mean, that would be a risk. I mean, Coleman seems fairly risk averse, I think, generally. But that would be interesting.
We've said this a lot about him, though. But actually, hindsight, looking back, like Leon was saying about the change in personnel the change in formations and the odd change in personnel, chucking George Williams in, you know, playing Cottrell out in Belgium. Actually, I think he's got more risk averse, and maybe I think the accusation is fairer now than actually it was at
it
the
was
time.
Then. Yeah,
hindsight has proven. I don't know. I mean, maybe they realised actually now's the time for a change. And I think I would prefer Williams to King. I mean, I know what you're saying. If you've got it in the locker, then clearly you use it. But I hope our tactic wouldn't just be go looking for free kicks. It's a bit like, you know, Wales rugby in the 90s, just find penalties in range for Neil Jenkins, just to keep you in touch. Sort of
thing. But I mean, looking at Slovakia game in the Euros, Russ.
Yeah.
Johnny Williams wins a free kick, Bale scores. About 10 minutes later, we should have had a penalty when Skirtle elbowed him in the face. We would have been 2-0 up against 10 men, possibly, if the penalty had gone in and you know, it had been given. And that would have been down to Johnny Williams being on the pitch and having a go, running at them.
That was his best game for us, I think.
And one thing I would say about Johnny Williams is he's much, much better, as all players are, but I think particularly for him, when he has skillful players, when he has Allen, Ramsey, yes. Bale. Yeah. He's someone who can fit in with them and not slow it down for them. Yeah. He can kind of contribute, not at their level, but he can go up a level and he can be an effective player when playing with them. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's really sad that he's in this kind of awful catch-22 in his club career, because he plays with mediocre players.
Yeah.
Which then doesn't allow him to show what he can do, mm-hmm. and then the cycle goes round and round.
Mm-hmm. I think he'll always look better at international level because of that. He plays with Bale and with Ramsey and Allen, and I don't think he'll ever get an opportunity to play with players that good at club level, sadly.
No, I agree. I mean, he still hasn't. I didn't realise when I wrote this piece a couple of months back, I hadn't realised this since I was doing the research. He's never started a game in the Premier League, which, you know, what is he, 23, 24? He needs to have done that, surely, you know. So when is he going to do it? The way things go, looking at the moment, probably not this season, because he's going to need to get a run of games under his belt for Ipswich. And not only that, not just play games, but actually affect games and win games before he's going to go back in the Palace side.
But, I mean, he won't go in the Palace side ever.
I'm inclined to agree, actually.
Well, this is kind of my thing with him. It's all very well as saying he plays better with better players, etc., etc. But I mean, there's nice players at Palace, and he doesn't get in their team, like Kabay and so on. It's up to him to make a decision on what kind of career he wants, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he just wants to run a game, though, doesn't he? He's had such rotten luck with injuries. But he's one of those players, you just never hear a bad word said about him. Managers adore him, other players love him. I can't wait for him and Hal Robson-Kanu to do their little video thing in John Lewis.
Probably a problem for him at club level if he's too nice. Nice players in that respect. I mean, look, like Lionel Messi has nearly got managers sacked for doing stuff he didn't want them to do. So, I mean, if you want to make it, you've got to be like that, I'm afraid.
You need to take over as his agent, Rich.
Well, yeah, or maybe Sonny does. Chris's son.
Go on and get Sonny's dad sacked.
yeah, that'd be an amazing family dynamic.
That would, Has he played much for Ipswich? Because I know Tom Lawrence has played and he's been playing well, but I mean, I was surprised that he was in the squad, to be honest. And again, it becomes back to that thing, isn't it? Oh, he's good to have in the squad, he's good to have around the dressing room, and those sort of cliches. And you begin to think, well, but at some point you need to be there because you can win a game, you can affect the game. Not a huge amount else to say about it, is there?
Predictions.
What do you reckon, Dan?
Right. I've looked at the rankings. For what I said about Yugoslavia and all the rest of it, they're down in the 40s ranking-wise, so they're below Slovakia, below Bosnia. We got to do something, haven't we? Get the monkey off our back. 1-0 win.
Yeah, I'll go for a 1-0 as well. I think it's going to be... I'm really looking forward to kind of, Russ, what you were saying earlier. It is going to be a better atmosphere. I think we need this to sort of just kickstart, like move. This is like a semi kind of hangover, I think, from the Euros, from the crowd, the fan perspective. 1-0. I think it'll be a really great night.
You reckon, Leon?
It's interesting. There's been quite a lot of talk from like English journalists about how boring international football is and how they don't like the international breaks because it breaks up all the excitement of the Premier League and stuff, but I think this is a game to really look forward to. I'm really up for this one. Two good teams, be going out to win it, and we've just had a great Euros, but we're playing against a team we have a poor record against, and I think this is a bit of a game to savour. Yeah, it's a Saturday night under lights and should be a good atmosphere, and I'll go for a Wales win as well. I feel maybe we'll score 3 goals. Actually, I'll go 3-1.
Ooh, bold!
Fighting talk.
I was going to say 2-1 because I don't think we've quite looked on the money defensively, and I can see them maybe sort of again, free kicks. There's going to be a lot of diving. It's going to be a frustrating game, isn't it? There's going to be lots of little niggly dives and little shirt pulls and things like that. And if the ref's on his guard as well, then, we could be picking up a few bits and pieces around their box as well. But
yeah, we've improved in that respect as well. I mean, we've got better kind of game intelligence. And I think you can target certain players. Like I was saying earlier, you can target Mitrovic from our point of view. You can also target Ivanovic as well, in terms of getting at him. Like his legs clearly aren't what they were. You could put Bale, you could put Ramsey up against him. I mean, and the thing is, he'll take a player out as well. He's got that intelligence, so you can possibly get him on a yellow early. There's loads of scope, I think.
He's their Skirtle, is he?
Yeah. A slight upgrade movie on him overall. But yeah.
You're talking about players needing to be a bit nastier. Skirtle's the very definition, isn't he?
Skeletor.
But he's just kind of like a hapless nasty,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And the other fixtures this weekend are Austria versus Ireland, which is a big game. I think a draw in that would be perfect. Mm. Really.
It's got a draw written all over it.
Yeah.
And it would, I think, really hammer Austria's chances. I mean, it's still early days, but if that was to be a draw, that would be just one win for them in their first four games, which I don't think anybody was necessarily expecting, least of all themselves. Georgia against Moldova.
Georgia will win that, I'm sure, because they're just a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a draw in that Austria-Ireland game and a win for us takes us back to the top, and then everyone's happy again.
Well, that would be obviously we've got to do what we've got to do, but if we were to win and then Austria-Ireland ended in a draw, they just get a point each, that would be an ideal situation. But maybe Austria will up it as well, because I said, dropping points at home to us, what was that, like the first game they hadn't won in almost like 2 years at home? Because their home record is superb. So, who knows? That point in Vienna may prove more important as the group goes on than we thought at the time. But we need 3 points here to get this back on track.
Very quick. I'm noticing Serbia have got a friendly then a few days after against the Ukraine. We don't have a fixture. But like going back to things like what we were saying about, you know, if Dummett is still in the Newcastle side in the Championship and Newcastle are doing well, would there be merit in having another game and having a look at players like Dummett, you know, another cap for Ward? Because we've had this thing where we play so few friendlies, particularly during the season.
Yeah,
we pick a few towards the end of the season from time to time, but we very rarely play them, certainly this time of year. So might there have been some merit in that? Because there's a lot of players in that squad that we really don't know a huge amount about at international level.
Possibly, just because we don't want to get into a situation where it's difficult for people outside of the core group to get in. There should always be an opportunity for someone to come in. And I mean, I would also say, I mean, it's very, very early. But I mean, I've done a little bit of reading up and kind of finding out from people who are kind of close to the club. But Ethan Ampadu is really, really genuinely a kind of, people are like astonished by what they're watching. So I'm not, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say bring him in for this game, but yeah, a friendly. I know he has trained with the squad, but kind of putting him in the squad in a kind of an official capacity. And then he's someone who we hope, and from having spoken to some Exeter fans and stuff, it might give him the platform to kind of raise his game, where it's going to be harder for him to do that with the kind of guys he's playing with at Exeter.
And they're having a dreadful.
He's still 15, isn't he? Something
16
like that.
Now,
he's 16 now.
But I think he played for Exeter when he was
15.
In the League Cup or something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he won Man of the Match in their last game playing in midfield, and he's also played at centre-back. Yeah. So if this is a guy who's 16 and can win Man of the Match, defence, midfield, against men, who, I mean, the thing is, like, he'll have been playing these games, and they were men looking to take him out, just wipe him off, like the face of the earth, basically.
At that level as well.
And then they didn't do that, so that's a guy.
Last 16-year-old Welsh defender I can think of was Craig Morgan, and look what he became. Look where he went in the game.
Ryan Green. Was that his name?
Ryan Green.
Did he play for Sheffield Wednesday?
No. That was a different Ryan, I think.
Wolves.
I'm going to play for Wolves. Oh,
right. Green was at Wolves when he played for Wales, I think. It seems to me, with no Tom Bradshaw being in, even though Church is out injured, Marley Watkins has actually played well as a sort of winger for Barnsley this season. He's got a few goals and assists. They're sort of mid-table in the Championship, but he's not getting a look in. I think Coleman has really decided. I mean, he said he's leaving the job at the end of this campaign. I think he's really decided he's just going to rely on these players that he knows that got him to the semi-final, got us to the semi-final of the Euros, to take us to the World Cup. And I don't think he's really particularly interested in bringing anyone else in, it seems. I think he's just going to kind of, you know, sort of live or die by these players. He knows them now. I mean, it could be that if you don't qualify, this is just Common's last year, basically, as Wales manager. So, you know, 12 months if we don't qualify, and 18 or 19 months if we do qualify. I think it's going to be hard for any manager, any young player to break into this squad now, really. And I think it's going to be probably up to the next manager, whoever that is, to bring in the likes of Ampadu or Harry Wilson, the other lad at Liverpool, Woodburn at Liverpool, maybe.
I think the thing is, you're talking, I mean, that on one level, that kind of worries me, actually, because I don't think actually we can afford just to kind of focus on, you know, a core 14 or 15 players. Yeah. But it's such a drop-off, because the players we're talking about are all 16 and 17 and 18. And I know we were blessed then with the way that Allen and Ramsey and Bale and Hennessy and the likes of those came through. But that's probably more the exception to the general rule. And let's be honest, they lost a lot of games before they started winning games. Mm. And I think if we end up going like we had under Hughes, going from kind of what we think is quite feast to then a real famine then, and someone else has to do that, that feels a bit of a retrograde step.
Well, yeah, so I think, I mean, just kind of, I totally kind of see where Leon's coming from, but I think possibly the presence of Oshan Roberts there with his, I think he'll be saying to the bosses at the FA, look, we have to kind of bring in some players. I mean, I'm not talking about kind of starting with Woodburn, Wilson and Ampadu, but I'm saying give them, like, you could give them 10 minutes at the end of a game, that's one. They're not going to do any damage any more so than other people you could mention who were kind of 28 or 29 and in the squad and going nowhere.
I mean, and there's an argument. I mean, the 21s didn't have a great campaign. So any players who were sort of 19, 20, 21, pushing on that or left that age grade, haven't particularly kicked on. So actually you kind of go, right, what is the next crop? And then you go straight to those, which I suppose to a certain extent, and again, whether that was through choice or necessity, and that whole real chestnut is kind of what Toshak did. I wouldn't mind seeing something just kind of freshening up the squad a little bit, and I think maybe a friendly game where you could have a closer look at, you know, the McDonald's and the Lawrences and the Emery Hugheses, I don't think would have been a disaster for us by any means. But then, you know, Champions League is underway, and you know, he doesn't want to annoy Wenger and he doesn't want to annoy Zidane and things like that. Not that Sean McDonald or Tom Lawrence are playing for those managers, obviously, but I mean, I can imagine there's a massive amount of resistance to managers for a friendly at this time of season, isn't it?
I think there'll probably be a friendly in February, won't there? And that game could well be at the Millennium Stadium as well.
Well,
I refuse to call it the Principality. That's,
I'll bleep that.
As a sort of warm up for the Champions League final, I think they'll want to play a football match at the Millennium Stadium before the Champions League final.
Yeah, well, it was
so maybe a game against Argentina or something.
I was looking at this though, Leon. I don't think there's a friendly date in February anymore.
Isn't it?
I don't think there is, because I went on the FIFA website.
Maybe March? Is there one in March? I don't know. No, we play Ireland in March, don't we? I mean,
we play Ireland in March, yeah.
Maybe after, we go to Dublin a few days after that or something.
I think that was the intention to do that in preparation for the Champions League, but I'm sure I read something where they now said that wasn't going to happen. Maybe that was my wishful thinking. I was dreaming about reading that article. Yeah.
You used the P word as well, Leon, so 50p in the swear box, please.
50 cents for me.
50 cents, okay.
The notoriously quiet P Stadium.
Yes.
Where fans lose their voices upon entering.
Yeah. Was it respectful 80 minute silence?
Yeah.
That did tickle
me. That was
me.
Really respectful. You've got to say, fair play to them.
Yeah. Okay, well, so what was that, four wins? I lost track. I can't remember what I said now. What did I say? No, I said a win, I said 2-1.
Yeah, we all went for the win. 1-0, 1-0, 2-1, 3-1. So they got to do it now,
yeah. Gaz probably would have said a draw, to be fair, with an 89th minute penalty conceded or something like that. Okay, well, listen, gentlemen, thank you very much. You need to get away, don't you?
Yeah, nice one.
Okay. I'm going to quickly plug the Kappa Kit podcast that I did with Simon Shakeshaft, Shaky.
aka Wales match worn, aka shaky match worn, aka lots and lots of match worn. He has a lot of online personas. Which actually, that sounds seedy, doesn't it? Sorry, I'll take that back. And there's going to be a blog to come before the weekend about that as well. And we'll probably get heavy rotation on Twitter. So, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Ooh, pleasure.
See you
Yeah,
Saturday.
Thank you.